are on air at Tampa Racing Radio for the Darlington Nashville NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topics Sound Off. We're going to do a lot of conversation here tonight about racing from over the weekend. We're going to start with some short track news. Then we'll get into our review of the ARCA East race at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. At 9 o'clock, we'll talk about the Truck Series race at Darlington Raceway and then the Xfinity Series race at Darlington Raceway. 9:30 is our guest, Dylan Zampa. He races the Pro Late Model Series in the SRL Spears Southwest Tour Series. And after that interview, we will do our NASCAR Cup Series review of their race at Darlington Raceway. 10 o'clock, of course, is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and we'll have a lot to discuss with our Fan for Racing crew. Joining me for tonight's show is our co-host for tonight, Sal Sagala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay. We've got a lot to talk about. I know there is a lot of things going on in the short track racing world. One of the big things here is Illinois is having their inaugural Speed Week, and there's four different tracks over the weekend here in Illinois that will feature racing, beginning on May 11th at the Spoon River Speedway in Banner, Illinois. Then they're going to go to Lincoln Speedway in Lincoln, Illinois on May 12th. May 13th, that's Farmer City Raceway. And on May 14th, there'll be a Fairbury, Illinois Speedway. And it's just going to be huge. There's a lot of racing stars that are going to be there. Overall, over all four races, there's over $100,000 on the line. So for winning. So really big event here in Illinois.
Yeah, they are going to be some big events. You know, I'm sure a lot of the, a lot of the short track drivers, you know, are looking forward to, you know, whichever ones, you know, they can make it to.
Yes, indeed. But that's not the only racing that's going on. If you want to know more about the Illinois Speed Week, there is news about that over on Flow Racing. But Racing America always shows a lot of great events that are coming up as well.
Okay, that's good. That's good news for all you short track fans out there. You know, they're looking for you know, some place to not only watch the racing, but also, you know, to check the schedules.
And Dylan Zampa, he's a great short track racer as well. He races the Pro Late Models in the SRL Spears Series. Does he have any races that are coming up, Sal?
Yeah, he has. I know on the 21st they have a race out here at Irwindale. And then
okay.
I'm not sure what else he has. I mean, what else he has in between that? He might have a race over at Madera. I'm not sure. That's something we'd have to ask him.
Okay. Also over at Racing America, they mentioned that Ryan Newman is entering the Little 500 at Anderson Speedway in Indiana. So it's his first sprint car race in decades. So Ryan Newman is hitting the short tracks for the Lucas Oil Little 500. So that's going to be fun for fans here in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is to see Ryan Newman get back in get back to his racing roots and, come out and support the series.
Absolutely. I think we might have talked about this on Thursday, but I'll mention it again here. Ken Schrader is joining the SRX racing at I-55 Raceway. So SRX continues to bring in a lot of big names into the sport.
Yeah, they are. They're doing a really good job with with everything, you know, that's going on with that series. You know, they just had the fan vote this past week, and Cole Williams ended up winning the fan vote over Brittany Zamora. Bubba Pollard and Steven Nassi.
Wow, that's a big win for Cole Moore.
Cole Williams.
Oh, Cole Williams. I'm sorry. I thought you said Cole Moore.
It's for Cole Williams. Yeah, he races out there in the Midwest, and there's a lot of stuff back out there in the back east.
Oh, okay, that's pretty awesome. Some of the other drivers in SRX are Paul Tracy, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Bobby Labonte, Ryan Newman, Marco Andretti, Michael Waltrip, Greg Biffle, and, of course, Tony Stewart. And then a lot of other things going on this year is when drivers win a race at one of the tracks that are on the schedule, that gives them an entry into the race when it comes from when the SRX does its that track later on in the season. So that's been cool to see this year as well.
Yeah, it is. It gives all the local drivers, you know, a chance, you know, to race in a, you know, in a series against, you know, some of the veteran pros from the different series, you know, all the way from NASCAR to, you know, to IndyCar.
Now, on June 18th, they're going to kick up the season at Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola, Florida. And then they go to South Boston Speedway on the 25th of June, Stafford Speedway on July 2nd, Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, where the ARCA East race this past weekend, on July 9th, I-55 Raceway in Peabody, Missouri on July 16th, and they'll conclude their season at Sharon Speedway out in Ohio on July 23rd. So it's just six races, but fans are looking forward to this. They started last year. This is their second season, and already there's a lot of buzz around SRX racing this year.
Oh, yeah. It's because of the – first of all, because of the drivers involved, and then, of course, you know, when you get to, you know, throwing some, you know, a local driver, you know, that, you know, that even adds more to the excitement.
It does. In fact, Chase Elliott is going to compete with the SRX at Sharon Speedway, the season finale. So one of NASCAR's most popular drivers is getting involved in the SRX.
Yeah, Tony's done a real good job, you know, who he's had chosen, you know, to compete in the series, you know, and to, you know, so it's going to be exciting to see, you know, to see all that come to a coast to a track near you.
Exactly. Now, William Byron also claimed a Nashville guitar this weekend. He's setting his sights on a Derby win. He's been racing a lot of the super late models this year already. And this weekend he raced at Nashville Fairgrounds and picked up his own guitar. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's got to think back to what Joey did to him. He did the same thing to Steven Nassi to win that race at Nashville. So I'm sure he forgot about it, but, you know, when, you know,
well,
he
I
said,
don't know. Godfather Moody, he said it was two separate, entirely different incidents. I didn't see it. Did you see it, Sal?
Yes, I seen it. That's what I'm saying. It was the same move that Joey did to him, he did to Nassi. He did the old bumper run on Nassi to win the race. Yeah, and he was afraid because of him and Nassi. They had an incident this 2016 Snowball Derby where William Byron was just a brand new, you know, well, everybody knows William Byron didn't start racing, you know, when he was a kid. He didn't start till he was a teenager. So one of the biggest races he raced at was a Snowball Derby, and he took Nassi out and got underneath him and couldn't keep control of the car and ended up crashing Nassi, and Nassi was pretty upset. He hasn't talked to him since. And then all of a sudden this incident comes up, you know, and he gave Nassi the old bump and run. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the Derby comes around in December, because William Byron, he's already he already made his commitment that he's going to race the Derby, and he's going to have a bullseye on his back.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if you read the article that they posted here, but it's really interesting. And I'd encourage people to listen or to check out the news over at Racing America for other activities that have taken place in the short track racing world. They also talk about the race at Darlington, so, and some takeaways there. So it's really kind of interesting to see NASCAR being featured on the Racing America site, along with all the short track racing that's taking place.
Yeah, but you got to remember, it's Racing America is run by Matt Weaver now, and Matt's always been a short track person. Yeah, but Matt still has his heart with the NASCAR, you know, and you know, that's why, you know, he still throws that stuff. And I talk to him every once in a while about that, and like he says, he goes, I still have to dip it to the, I still got to keep the tabs on the NASCAR, you know, along with all the short track stuff. So hopefully, I was telling him about getting him on the show one of these days, you know, so we could talk to him, you know, a little bit more about how he got in with Racing America and how he got his start and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I've met Matt Weaver at the racetrack, so yeah, that would be really cool to have him on the show. All right, we've got a few more minutes here. Are there any other races that you want to make sure we mention before we move on?
Yeah, we got Irwindale is having their we're having our race this Saturday. It's just going to be our regular Pro Late Models, Legends, Super Stocks, Irwindale Race Trucks, and Spec Late Models that'll be going on this Saturday. Unfortunately, I won't be there because I'll be in Disney World, so, or else I'd be there covering the race. And this is the first of three races that they're giving a commemorative coin to all the fans, to the first, I think first 2,500 fans that come through the gates, they're going to get it. The first coin will be this Saturday. The second coin will be on the 21st,
cool.
And the third coin will be on the 28th. Yeah, so it'll be a series of three like chips, like they look like poker chips with a picture of the speedway on it. So each one will be different. So it's going to be pretty neat, you know, for the fans to collect.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. It sounds like a good promotion. I hope they're getting the word out there. And thank you, Sal, for bringing that up so the fans know that that's happening. And they have a chance to get one of those commemorative coins.
Yeah, it's going to be neat.
Okay. Next up, we're going to get into the race in the Arca Menards Series East. Sammy Smith makes it 3 out of 4 races that he's won so far this season. He pretty much dominated at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway this weekend in the Music City 200. So he also got a guitar this weekend.
Yeah, he's really you know, shaping up, you know, to be a really good driver, you know, and gosh, he flies around me. You know, he's really really doing a lot.
Okay. Well, he started second, but he had to chase down 17-year-old Jake Finch in the first 44 laps of the race. Finch took the lead to start the race after earning the pole award, but the pass for the lead came on the 45th lap when Smith moved to Finch's inside to take the lead at the start finish line. But once he was out front, he never really was seriously challenged. He led the rest of the way, getting the checkered flag at 8.333 seconds ahead of Finch. So he said clean air made all the difference in the world.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it did. You know, and I'm sure Jake Finch gave it a really good run for the money. You know, Jake's a, he's a young up-and-coming driver. And actually, he was out here for the All-Star Showdown. He came out here, out west, out here to run the series. And you know, he's a tough guy. But like you said, Sammy Smith just has a little bit more experience than him.
Yes, he does. This is his second season racing in the ARCA East. He won the championship last year, and he's pretty much picking up where he left off last year. Jake Finch worked his way past Taylor Gray with 13 laps left to finish second. That's his best finish in three East Series starts this season. Gray settled for third after he won at Dover last weekend for David Gilliland Racing. Mason Mingus and Leland Honeyman round out the top five. Then it was Tanner Arms, Michael Lira, Donald Fiedtke, Matt Wilson, Ryan Roulette were 6th through 10th. Now keep in mind you can watch a replay of the Music City 200 from Nashville on USA Network on Friday, May 13th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're working during that time, I set the DVR to catch this race. So your thoughts about that top 10 there?
Yeah, you know, the top 10, you know, you start looking at the, you know, the drivers, you know, all the way down. I mean, the Grays are really having a really good season, Taylor and Tanner, you know, Michael Lira, who's I can't remember if we had Michael Lira on the show.
We used to have him on the show pretty frequently.
Yeah, there you go. I remember him now. And then, of course, you know, you look at the rookie Jake Finch finishing second, and then you had 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, actually, had 6 rookies in the top 10, which is you know, a really good showing by the rookie drivers in this series.
Yes, indeed, it really is. But I tell you what, Sammy Smith has been the cream at the top this season, and he's had some drivers to kind of challenge him a little bit. But these guys are going to have to really work really hard. Their next race that's coming up is actually going to be a combination race at Iowa Speedway in June. It's also the second segment of the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. So that will take place on June 11th at Iowa Speedway, the Calypso Lemonade 150. So it's 3 different series, 1 race. So there's going to be a lot of points on the line for 3 different series in that event.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure with that race, you know, there's going to be a shakeup, you know, since they take, you know, the series that they originally raced for the points of the night, mm-hmm. and then like you said, then it's a Sioux Chiefs Showdown race, so it's going to really add that much more excitement to it.
It really is. You've got the ARCA Menards series there too. So the ARCA Menards series, the ARCA East, and the Sioux Chiefs Showdown are all point-paying events for that one race. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of drivers in that race as well. Okay, do you want to cover the points from this race?
Yeah.
After the national race?
Yeah, so the points as we see it now, it's Sammy Smith is leading the points. Taylor Gray sitting in second. He's 9 points out of first from Sammy Smith. And then we got Leland Honeyman sitting in third.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth is Christian Rose. Fifth is Stephanie Moyer. That runs out the top 5, and then from there, then we go to 6th is Brad Smith, 7th is Jake Finch, 8th is Donald. Gosh, I still can't.
Fiedtke.
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 Yeah. Yeah, Fiedtke. And then ninth is Dead Escato, and then 10th is Willie Mullins rounds out the top 10.
Yes, indeed. Only six of these drivers have raced all six races, or all four races, I should say. And I think this is kind of the midway point for them of the season. So this next these next four races are going to be really big in this series. And all these drivers want to beat Sammy Smith.
Oh yeah, I mean, basically that's where it's at. I mean, you're gonna have to beat Sammy in order to get the, in order to get through the championship. But Taylor Gray's only 9 points out, so it can be done.
It can be done. You're absolutely right. Now, whoops, I keep trying to get to the other races. Now, the Young Menard Series, before they get to Iowa, they are going to be racing the Dutch Boy 150 at Kansas Speedway this coming weekend. So it's going to be another big race for the Arca Menard Series at Kansas Speedway. That will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So Jay and I will talk about that this Thursday night. On June 4th, there's a big race out in the West, Jay. Or I'm sorry, Sal. There's a big race out in the West. The Portland 100 on June 4th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time at Portland International Raceway. That one will be live streamed on Flow Racing.
Yeah, that's one of the stops on the Arco and Arts West Series. It'll be a road course, and after that, then the race behind, right directly behind that one that comes up in June will be the race in Sonoma. So they'll be racing back to back road courses.
Okay, let's we've got a few minutes here. Let's go ahead and cover the points for the Arca Menard Series and then the Arca West as well.
Okay, the points for the Arca. Oh, no, we already did the Arc East.
Yeah, we already did the East. We're looking to cover the main Arca series and then the West. Because this is
pretty close.
But that's going to change, I think, over some time here.
Yeah, so the points in the Arca series is Raja Karuth leading the points. Daniel Dyson in second. Nick Sanchez in third. Parker Chase in fourth, and Corey Heim rounds up the top five. And then from there, then we go down to Tony Redinger, Gus Dean, Amber Balkin, Ryan Huff, and D.A. Wilson round up the top 10 in the Arca series.
Right, 43 points from top to bottom. And actually, the person in 11th place is tied with the person in 10th place. That's Andy Jakowiak. Let's see. There's several drivers that have raced all three of the races so far in this series. There's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 that I can see in the top 15 that have raced all three races.
Yeah, if you go beyond that, then you got you have two more after the 15th spot.
Mm-hmm. So again, this race in Portland is going to be kind of a big event. Roger Caruth is looking pretty good in the main Arca Menard series. Now, I will say, Daniel Dye, I think, has been suspended. He had an off-track incident that he's been charged with, and so until that's resolved, I don't think he's going to be doing any racing. So I do think that we will see that shake up a bit in the Arca Menard series.
Oh yeah, definitely that is, because it's going to, you know, with him being out on him, it's a indefinite suspension. So.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, whatever Arca series decides they want to do, he was never charged with anything, but he still got the suspension for the infraction, for the idea that he did get arrested. So
Oh, I didn't hear that he hadn't been charged. The last I heard, he was charged. Did they drop the charges?
When they picked it up, they never charged him with anything.
Oh, okay.
That was the thing that got a lot of the fans upset. They said, if he's not charged, then why is NASCAR sending him out?
Okay. I thought he was
detained.
Oh, okay.
He was picked up and detained, but he was never charged with anything, and they let him go. But when that happened, NASCAR just automatically, or ARCA automatically took the reins and suspended him indefinitely until they find out more, until an investigation is done. But
okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just crazy.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and cover the points for the West?
Yeah, we're still at the ARCA West. We're still with Jake Drew and Tanner Reef leading the points. And then from there, we go to Colmore. Then Paul Petroselli Jr., Austin Herzog, Tatsus is sixth, Takuma Koga seventh, Joe East is eighth, and Sebastian Arias is ninth. And actually, the top 10, and Bridget Burgess. So the top 10 have raced all three races.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting. Let me go back to my top 10 here. So you went all the way down, Bridget Burgess from 10. Yeah, this is really kind of cool because all of these drivers have raced all three races. So that's kind of cool to see in the West.
Yeah.
It's kind of tight at the top.
Well, yeah, it is tight. It's only 5 points. Actually, it's six points between the top three, Colmore, Tanner Reif, and Jake Drew. And then from there, that's Paul Petroselli Jr. with at 14 out.
Wow. Okay. Now, I sent you a link, Sal, because I knew I had read it somewhere, that he was actually arrested for a felony battery charge in Volusia County, Florida.
Yeah, no, he was arrested, but he was never charged.
Oh,
I heard. Yeah, you can get arrested, and they're going to tell you. They have to tell you something when you get arrested. They have to tell you, okay, we're going to arrest you for, like for that. But from what I had heard, he was never really formally charged with the battery.
Okay.
Yeah, because it says right here he was arrested on a felony battery charge.
Right. The charging affidavit, I mean, there's a post here from Bob Cochris with a charging affidavit. And it gives a kind of a description of why he was arrested. So.
Oh, yeah, they said he was. It was kind of like the guy.
We don't have to get into that.
Oh no! Oh, no, I'm not going to say what it was. But I'm just going to say it's kind of like how you say it. They were just kind of having fun, and he took it a step too far, and the other guy went in.
Says he was
pressed
booked.
Charges on him.
They've got a booking number and a booking date and everything, Sal. I don't know where you're getting that a huge. Where did you read that?
Well, I'm not going to go back and look for it, but I just read that he wasn't really he wasn't formally charged, and there were some people in the racing industry that were saying that unless he was actually, formally charged, it doesn't matter either way. He's indefinitely suspended, so he's out of racing right now. So.
Okay. Well, I shouldn't seem the source of the information because everything I've read indicates that there was an arrest. So anyway, I just want to make sure that we're giving correct information here. Sal's call dropped for whatever reason, so we'll wait for him to call back in. We're at the top of the hour, so we will get into now. We're going to leave the ARCA Racing venue and go to the Truck Series race that took place at Darlington Raceway this weekend. I'll go ahead and get that started, and I think Sal will be back. He is back already.
I think you put me on timeout for a minute.
No, I didn't. Honestly, I didn't. I came back and you were gone. And I was like, oh, no, what happened?
I know. I don't know. My phone went beep beep. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, Sharon, push the timeout button. I said, dude, you're on timeout for a couple minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, oh,
no, honestly.
I'll just run with it.
Nope. Honestly, I think it was just a drop. Okay, we're moving on to the Truck Series race at Darlington. John Hunter Nemechek at the age of 24 in the number 4 Mobil 1 Toyota for Kyle Busch Motorsports and with crew chief Eric Phillips won. He got his 12th victory in 131 Camping World Truck Series races. It was his first victory and fourth top 5 finish this year. I know he said he was really happy to finally get that breakthrough win. His first victory and third top 10 finish in 3 races at Darlington. Carson Hosnabar posted his second top 10 finish in 3 races at Darlington and his fourth top 10 finish this season. Grant Infinger finished third, posting his fourth top 10 finish in 4 races at Darlington Raceway. And Dean Thompson, who finished 15th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, give me a couple minutes here, and I'll give the rest of the lineup here for the race results. Finishing in fourth place was Ty Majeski. Then it was Parker Kligerman rounding out the top 10, followed by Ryan Preece, Zane Smith, Tyler Ankrum, Todd Bodine, who is back behind the wheel, Camping World Truck Series vehicle, and then Matt DiBenedetto finishing in 10th place. Now, just to kind of finish out how this race finished up, he was the fastest truck actually won in Friday's Dead on Tools 200 at Darlington, but not without much ado between the green flag and the checker. The pole winner, John Hunter Nemechek, fought through 10 cautions, an extra pit stop to tighten a loose wheel, and an overtime restart to post his first Truck Series victory of the season, holding off a hard luck Carson Hosnabar by 0.552 seconds in the two-lap shootout at the finish. So that was really cool to see. Matt Crafton initially finished fifth, but he was disqualified for his truck being too low in the post-race inspection. Stage 1 was run by Parker Kligerman. Stage 2 was won by Carson Hosnabar. There were 16 lead changes among 9 drivers and 10 cautions for 54 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 91.625 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the race results there, Sam?
It was a good race between, coming to the end, with Carson Hosnabar and John Hunter Nemechek. There was a lot of action, a lot of wrecks, and, just a lot of upset drivers, basically. But you know what? It was,
that's not unusual for Darlington.
Yeah, and I thought for a while Ross Chastain was going to catch a win in the Truck Series, and then, he had his issues out there, but I mean, John Hunter Nemechek ended up, being the cream of the crop, and got that win when he needed it, and it's been a while since he's won. He was real happy with the win, and you know, it's good to see him, you know, up there, you know, with the wind.
Yeah, our driver from Japan, Akinori Ogata, had an engine problem, so he didn't finish as well as he would have liked. But there were several people caught up in accidents, including Haley Deegan. Then it was Blaine Perkins, Kate Fogelman, Chris Wright, Tanner Gray, Chase Purdy. All of those drivers were caught up in accidents, making it not such a good night for them in the Truck Series race.
Yeah, it was, you know, a lot of people are blaming the onion, you know, for a couple, you know, I guess one of the wrecks, you know, they try to blame it on Bodine. But, you know, he's too old, he shouldn't be out there, but you know what? He wants to try and get that, was it the
800th start.
Yeah, his 800th start, you know, so, you know, he picked up it's kind of neat that a Camping World, you know, picked him up, you know, and, you know, gave him the opportunity, you know, to get that. I know he's only racing a few races, you know, to get up there, but, you know, hats off to his ninth place finish, you know, top 10 finish out there.
Yes, indeed. You know, Carson Hocevar, I still say he's knocking on the door of getting a victory here soon.
Yeah, he is. I mean, there's an incident that happened with him and Derek Thorne a year and a half ago, you know, still rubs me wrong. So, you know, that's why I'm not really a big fan of his, you know, or the way he races. Cause when he's in a super late, he races the same way. He's a missile out there. Torpedo.
Oh, okay.
Per se. But I mean, he races hard here in the Truck Series, but like you said, you know, as a driver, you know, yeah, he is knocking on the door. I mean, he's, you know, he's had a few second place finishes, you know, so, I mean, he's just right there. He just needs a break, you know, a lucky break, you know, to get that win.
Yes, indeed. Let's go ahead and cover the points reports here.
Okay, the points on the trucks are... As it stands, we got Ben Rhodes is still leading the points. Second is John Hunter Nemechek. Third is Chandler Smith. Fourth is Stuart Friesen, and Zane Smith round out the top five. And then from there in sixth, we got Carson Hocevar. Seventh is Ty Majeski. Eighth is Christian Eckes. Ninth is Grant Enfinger. And 10th is Tanner Gray. On the bubble is Parker Klingerman, only a mere 4 points. No, he's more than that. He's 17 points away from Tanner Gray.
Yes, indeed. And then it gets kind of tight after that with Tyler Ingram, Matt Kraft, and Derek Krause. They're only 4, 3, and 5 points away from each other. So we'll have to see what happens with these guys as the season continues. They've got 7 races in. And Zane Smith has the most playoff points, followed by Ben Rhodes. With Zane Smith has 13, Ben Rhodes has 10. So this is going to be a fun one to watch. You've got Zane Smith is the only driver with 2 wins this season.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got Ben Rhodes, John Hunter Nemechek, and Chandler Smith each have 1 apiece. And then
yes, indeed.
The other win is Corey Heim has the other win. It's weird to see when you look at Kyle Busch, you know, and doesn't have a win this year, you know, the Truck Series.
Well, he's not – oh, yeah, he doesn't have a win yet. Corey Heim, just to kind of clarify that, Corey Heim has only raced 3 of the 7 races. Although he has that win, I don't think – because he's racing part-time, I don't think he's going to be eligible for the playoffs. Right now he's ranked 29th. They have to be in the top 20, I believe, to be playoff eligible.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure if they're if they might wait until, you know, they'll just give him a few starts, see how he feels, you know, with the truck. And then probably next year he might come out full bore, you know, to try and get, you know, rookie of the year and you know, everything else that goes along with it. But he's a really nice kid. Met him at the Snowball Derby this past year. He's pitted two cars over from Derek, and really, really super nice kid.
Yeah, he's been on the show a couple of times. Who knows, we might be able to get him back again. But, yeah, this is really shaping up to be an interesting year for the Camping World Truck Series. Ben Rhodes appears to be on track for another championship this year. If not the playoff championship, he's definitely on track for the regular season championship.
Oh yeah, he's been consistent. You know, he's been up there and you know, just doing what he has to do. You know, to make things happen for his season. You know, and that's what you need to do. You need some kind of consistency in there.
Yes, indeed. So we'll have to see what happens. Time will tell. Okay. We are not quite at our cutoff point, but I'm going to go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series because they raced this weekend also at Darlington Raceway. And this is one of those things where Darlington Raceway, a lot of people go on home unhappy, and only a few people go home happy after this race. So you never know what can happen. But Justin Allgaier was the winner at age 35 in the number 7 Hellman Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports. His crew chief was Jason Burnett. He got his 17th victory in 383 Xfinity Series starts, his first victory and 6th top 10 finish this year, and his 2nd victory and 10th top 10 finish in 14 races at Darlington. Noah Gregson finished 2nd. That's his 6th top 10 finish in 6 races at Darlington and his 8th top 10 finish this season. Riley Herbst in 3rd posted his 2nd top 10 finish in 5 races at Darlington Raceway. Austin Hill was 10th. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Kind of go over some of the other things that happened in this race. The numbers tell the story for Justin Allgaier's impressive victory in the Mahindra Roxor 200 at Darlington Raceway. Despite starting the race at the rear for changing a battery during pace laps, Justin Allgaier quickly got to the front to win Saturday's race at Darlington Raceway. It was his first win in 364 days while he led a race-high 76 laps. Junior Motorsports has 3 consecutive wins by different drivers. Winning both stages, Noah Gregson finished runner-up. It was his series-high 8th top 5 finish of the season. As I mentioned, John Riley Herbst finished in 3rd. It was John Hunter Nemechek finishing 4th, and Sam Mayer running out the top 5. Then running out the top 10 were Landon Cassill, Brandon Jones, A.J. Allmendinger, Austin Hill, and Daniel Hemric. There were 13 lead changes among 6 drivers and 8 cautions for 33 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 107.589 miles per hour. Gap from 1st to 2nd was 0.259 seconds, so it was really, really close. Your thoughts about the top 10 here, Sal?
Yeah, it was a really good race. It was neat to see when they interviewed Sam Mayer after the race. He was just all smiles. He was all excited, you know, getting that top 5 finish. It's always neat, you know, to see, you know, when the younger drivers like that, you know, and they really appreciate, you know, it's not so much the win, you know, it's just getting that, you know, that finish where he finished.
Exactly.
Justin Allgaier, though, he was really on his game, and, you know, to hold off Noah, you know, for the win, you know, was neat. You know, I'm sure, you know, they kind of went by each other, you know, and kind of like do a little high five. But now, what about Riley Herbst in that third place finish? Gosh, he really fought for that.
Yeah, that was really awesome.
You know, really, really worked hard for that finish there.
He really has. A couple of drivers were caught up in accidents, so, which is unusual, but it was only two. Joe Graff Jr., who was supposed to be on the show tonight, he had a family emergency, so we had to reschedule him. But look for him to be back on the show. And Myatt Snyder also was caught up in an accident. Sheldon Creed had an engine problem, so he didn't have a good day at Darlington this weekend.
No, he didn't. It was, gosh, he's just struggling so much with these, with this series, you know, with the cars, you know, just, I mean, we're not seeing the usual Sheldon Creed that, you know, we're used to seeing, in the truck series.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how he does as the season progresses. You know, seems to be certain tracks that he struggles with more than others. He'll have some good runs and then some not so good runs. So it's been a bit of a mixed bag for Sheldon Creed this year for sure. It's good to see Landon Castle doing as well as he's doing in the Xfinity Series.
Oh, yeah, he's doing really well. I mean, you know, he's getting some good finishes, you know what, and you know, he's doing what he has to do, you know, to stay, you know, up in the, you know, high up in the points, you know, for the, you know, to hopefully grab himself a spot, you know, when the chase begins.
And speaking of the points, why don't we go ahead and cover those? Yeah.
Okay. Leading the points is still AJ Allmendinger. Sitting in second is Noah Gragson. Third is Ty Gibbs. Fourth is Justin Allgaier. Fifth is Josh Berry. And rounding out the top six is Brandon Jones. Ty Gibbs still has the 3 points and 17 playoff points, you know, that's leading the series. And then Noah Gragson is behind him with 2 points and 15 playoff points. And then from there we go to seventh is Sam Mayer. Eighth is Riley Herbst. Ninth is Ryan Sieg. 10th is Austin Hill, 11th is Landon Castle, and sitting on the bubble is Daniel Hemric with Anthony Alfredo sitting in the 13th spot. So those are our top 12 points. Sheldon Creed is sitting in 15th. He's got a mountain to climb.
Yeah, he's got a big mountain to climb there. But if he can get that win and stay in the top 20, that would still put him into the playoffs. It would unseat the 12th place person, but Sheldon Creed could still do it if he can get a win and stay in the top 20.
Yes, and last year's champion is down there on the bubble. So it might be like the year that Kyle Busch won the championship and then come back the next year and didn't make the playoffs. Daniel Hemric could possibly be that same driver, you know, be last year's champion and then this year not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, Daniel's racing with a different team this year, so you can see that which team you're with can make a big difference. He's with Colleg Racing, which is a really good team, but for some reason he just did better last year and won that championship and was extremely consistent last season.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was consistent up, you know, to where, you know, he made the chase, you know, and was able, you know, to catch the championship. Of course, his one and only win, and it came, you know, the last race for the championship race. So, you know, it was good to see that out of him.
Yes, indeed. I think this race, it was really good to see Justin Allgaier break his winless streak. And I think that's not going to be good news for the rest of the competition. Now that he's done that, we might see him in victory lane again sometime soon.
Yeah, we're all hoping to see him in victory lane pretty soon again. You know, he's definitely one driver to keep an eye on.
Yes, indeed. Now, their next race isn't until May 21st, they'll be racing the SRS Distribution 250 at Texas Motor Speedway on the 21st. So there will be a qualifying and practice sessions at that track. For the truck series, I didn't mention when they were racing next. They are racing this weekend at Kansas Speedway. So we will see them on the track this weekend. We'll talk about it on Thursday night, the Heart of America 200. We'll start at 8 p.m. on Saturday. So it's a night race, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Again, they'll have a practice and qualifying session. And again, we'll get more into that with our preview show on Thursday night. Okay. anything else you think we need to mention here in the Xfinity series, Sal?
I think we got basically everything covered. You know, we got the points covered. We have the the race winner. You know, some of the excitement, you know, that happened, you know, during the race. You know, it was, some of the throwback schemes were really neat. You know, to see the different, you know, see what each team came up with. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of sad that, I can't remember the name of the driver who wanted to drive the Skull Bandit, take a couple of laps and.
Oh yeah, couldn't do it. That was Trackhouse. That was in the Cup.
Yeah,
series.
They were. Yeah, in the Cup Series. That's right. Yeah, and. It wasn't NASCAR. It was the broadcasters that said, you know, because they don't allow any more tobacco or alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know, and didn't let them.
I am a little surprised that they didn't know that going into it.
Well, it's like they said, it wasn't part of the series. It was just an exhibition thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they figure, you know, it was going to be a big thing. It's not like, because what it is in professional sports, all in all, whether it don't matter what sport it is, you're not allowed to have any tobacco or alcohol products.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, tobacco
yeah,
products. Can't say alcohol because
right.
we have alcohol, but you can't have tobacco. So he wasn't part of the race. He was just an exhibition, and I think that's what they're banking on, you know, with it. Hey, you know, we're only an exhibition. You know what? What's going to be the big thing? You know, if we, what's the big deal? You know, if we run a car for one or two laps, you know, with
mm-hmm.
the throwback.
Well,
but
the car would have run for the whole race. It wouldn't have run for just one or two laps. It would have run for the whole race. So.
Okay. I thought it was, he was only going to just bring it out for a parade lap.
Well, maybe that's what he
did.
Maybe that's what he did, but that was his throwback car for Darlington. So he was planning to race that car.
Okay. Yeah, I thought when I first heard it, you know, that it was just going to be, you know, it was just an exhibition, you know, to run it, you know, a few laps around in honor of Harry Gamp, you know, and it's
okay.
just going to be just a quick thing, but yeah, who knows?
They
I mean, either way,
they ended up doing that, but I'm not sure if they did that or not, but my understanding is that's the car they were planning to race.
It's just a sad deal.
It is, because a lot of fans were looking forward to seeing that paint scheme on the track this weekend at Darlington. It's one of the most fun weekends. What's kind of bad about it is that it's over Mother's Day weekend, And my Mother's Day weekend was completely packed in, and I got to watch a little bit of the Cup Series race, but I totally missed the truck race. I totally missed the Xfinity Series race, and I listened to it on the radio, and I watched the first two stages of the race. But it's rough for me because I don't get to see that much of the racing over Mother's Day weekend.
Yeah, you know, it was the same thing when we had racing for the on Easter Sunday. I thought that was very horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very. I didn't think that was right. They're racing on Easter Sunday. You know what? You put a lot of people, you know, kind of out because you know they were, you know, they have family gatherings. You know, and some of the race fans had to. Not only that, but you know, you took it for the drivers. You know, you took Easter
mm-hmm.
Sunday away from the drivers and their kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't feel was right. You know,
there was a lot of viewership though.
Yeah, there was. You know, because people were sitting around during their picnics or barbecues. You know, watching
mm-hmm.
the race, but I mean, it wasn't fair to the drivers. You know, that have kids. You know, if they had to go and spend the weekend, you know, at a racetrack instead of you know spending it how they normally spend it. You know.
Okay, well, let's talk about your guest that's coming up, Sal, because he's in waiting right now. So I'm going to bring him into the queue if you want to go ahead and do an introduction.
Yeah. He even came early this time. Last time he didn't make it, so he wanted to make sure he wasn't
going
to be late.
Well, I'm glad to see he's here.
Yeah, so we get a few minutes with him. Anyways, our guest tonight is Dylan Zampa. He's races in the SRL Southwest Tour Pro Late Series out here over here in California, and he's also one of the finalists for the Kawicki Development Program second year out. And you got to follow him on social media. This kid is amazing. The stuff, all the charity work he does for the Kawicki thing. Plus, he's got an exciting race coming up also on May 21st here at Irwindale, along with his prolate. So with that, we want to welcome Dylan to the show. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you, man. You got a busy schedule here coming up here for the month of May. A lot of racing going on. Plus you're also prepping for a race that we'll talk to a little bit later on in the. You know, in your interview, but for now, congratulations, you know, on getting your second finalist, you know, for the Alan Kawicki Development Program again.
Yeah, it's an honor to be a part of such a prestigious program. Thanks to Tom Roberts and all the Kawicki board members for just allowing me to be part of their program for a second year. So just looking forward to getting the year rolling. We're rolling through the Kawicki charity work pretty good right now, so we're just going to keep it rolling, just trying to do as much work as we can per race and through the off weeks when we're not racing.
So kind of give our listeners a little background on what exactly this program entails.
The program is for, I would consider, upcoming drivers, just to get their name out there a little bit more, and it's also to represent Alan and represent that famous number seven. And when it just teaches you to be a better person on and off the racetrack with either helping other drivers in your area or doing community service work and working on your social media, just all those big things while representing Alan on your race car when you're racing.
You know, and for our listeners that don't understand, you know, Alan Kawicki was a special driver, you know, back when he was racing in the Cup Series, and you know, for them, you know, to put this program together, you know, to honor him the way they have, you know, especially with the young up and coming drivers, you know, I'm sure it means a lot to his family, but I know for each driver that's been involved with it, you know, there's that special place in your heart, you know, for the program.
Yeah, it's just an honor to be part of that program. Alan was, I would like to consider my team as how Alan used to race. He worked out of his own shop, paid for all of his own stuff, worked on all of his cars by himself with a couple of buddies. That's how I feel like I am with my crew. Got a couple of buddies from town that go out with us. We all have a blast at the race weekend. It just brings us closer together as a family and as friends. So I just love everyone that is connected with my race team and just all my friends and sponsors. Just, I couldn't do it without them.
So let's talk a little bit about your race team. I know we've had you on before and we talked about, you know, the program, but let's talk a little bit more about what Dylan Zappa has going on for the, not only for, you know, these upcoming races, but for the rest of the season.
Yeah. So I think we're going to be running about 25 races this year. I think we're about 4 to 5 races in so far. And it's going great so far. We got a lot of top fives and three wins so far this year. So we're just looking to keep it rolling, try to get as many wins as we can. We're not really too worried about the SRL points. We're more worried about the Kawicki points. We're just trying to get, win just as much as we can in everything we're doing right now. So just couldn't do without my parents, especially my dad, me and him, and my mom, always working on ways to raise money for any charity that we're working on right now. So I just couldn't do without my parents.
And actually, part of winning the Young Guns last year, the Young Guns Championship last year with the SRL, you have an opportunity coming up on May the 21st.
Yeah, big thanks to Joe Farre and Sigma Performance Services for putting on that challenge last year for all the young drivers. I was very surprised come to the last race that all we had to do was just finish inside the top five and we sealed the deal. And the funny thing about it is I was racing in the points for it against my brother. So felt just a little good to beat him in that. So I got to rub that in a little bit on. But I'm excited to run a Super Late Model for my first time against some of the best drivers on the West Coast. So I'm just glad that my whole family is going to be there to watch me, and I'm just looking forward to it.
You know, and actually, you know, when you talk about family, you know, it's kind of neat to go to the track, you know, and I see you guys, you know, you guys are, you know, a family, you know, you, your mom and dad, you know, and your brother. You know, of course, you know, I post pictures of you and your brother racing against each other. You know, you guys have that little camaraderie out on the track, but off the track, you guys are, I mean, it's really neat to see, you know, how well, you know, you all get together, you know, you guys all gel together, you know, and, you know, all the fun that you have out there at the track.
Yeah, just even on race weekends, we're just normal brothers. But when it comes to the racetrack, he's just any other competitor out there. I don't race him any different. Race him just race him as hard and clean as everyone else on the racetrack. When we're at home, we're either working on the race cars or me and him go out and just do brother things, go bowling, golfing, just all kinds of stuff that we can do around Napa.
You know, what's it like, you know, to work on your car? You know, you mentioned, you know, you guys are like the way Alan did. You know, he worked on his car at the home. You know, you don't have a big race shop, you know, like some of these drivers out there, but yet you guys are very competitive. You know, come race weekend, I'll never forget the winter showdown, you know, the battle that, you know, you and Seth Weiss had out there, you know, racing for the win.
Yeah, me and Seth Weiss are about the same. We both work out of our own garage. So to see me and him compared to a lot of the other drivers in our field that work out of big shops, feels good to run up front. I'm just super thankful that my dad and just all my sponsors put a lot of effort and to helping me pursue my career. And just, we work out of our little two-car garage. Sometimes we actually pull one car out of the trailer and we put it in our front yard and we work on it there. It makes my mom mad just a little bit, but to get to the next race, we got to do what we got to do. So I'm just super, super thankful that I get to do what I'm doing right now.
You know what? And how do you find the balance between school, doing the Kawicki thing, and then, you know, of course, you know, getting your car ready, because I've seen some of the pictures you guys post on social media, you know, and you know, it's a hands-off family operation to get the cars together. Even talking with your dad, you know, on race weekends, you know, he talks about, you know, how everybody pitches in, you know, and, you know, to get the cars ready, get them all prepped and get them to the track.
Yeah, so sometimes we, some body parts get messed up, sometimes we'll one car out into the driveway, like I was saying, and we'll work on it there. And sometimes our crew members, they're working full time. Sometimes even after work, late at night, around 6, 7:30 at night, they'll come by over and help work on the cars a little bit, just to get them ready for the race weekend. But managing all of my social media, school, working on the race car, it's definitely difficult. But it's fun. I get to do what I love to do. The social media work was difficult for me to get used to last year when I first got into the Kawicki program, but now I'm starting to figure it out as the year's going on. I feel like I'm getting better and better as every time I get on Facebook to post something. But school's my main thing. I only have about a month left of my senior year, and I'm signing up for college. And I should be starting my first college classes in the fall. So I'm just looking forward to moving on with my life and trying to move up the ranks of racing also.
Cool. Now with that, I'm gonna hand it over to Sharon, the show host. I know she has a bunch of questions for you too. Sharon?
Okay. Sorry, I was on mute. I sent you a message, but apparently you didn't get it. Dylan, thanks again for being on the show. It's really great to have you on. There's quite a few young guns that are doing really well in the series this year. Talk about the competition this year, and I know you raced at Irwindale in the first race this season. You're going back there on May 1st. What are your goals and expectations going into Irwindale?
Yeah, so the competition this year is just as stout as it was last year. Even though Jeremy Doss isn't there this year, the competition's still as stout as it was last year. With Capello being there, he's only ran two races out of the four races we ran, and he's won two of the races he's shown up at. So he's a big contender, great guy to race against. He knows his stuff. He works on the Camping World Truck Series team, so he knows what he's doing. And the All-Star Showdown race at Irwindale was on the half-mile track. We struggled a little bit when we were there. Come to race time, we struggled a little bit more. But we're going back down to the one-third mile inside the half mile. So we had really good speed all three races last year we ran there. We had a fifth place and two second-place finishes. So expectations are to go in there with the same mindset we've been going in with every race. Just get the car through the race in one piece, no scratches, and try to get to the front. And we got a couple things we want to try with the setup just to get a little bit better, because the inner track at Irwindale is really hard on tires, and by lap 20, you're sideways. So we're trying a couple things to get the car to work on the long runs, and we'll see what we got when we show up there.
You know, you bring up a good point there. You're talking about the long runs of your car. That's one of the biggest things that I think a lot of young drivers learn over the course of their career, is taking care of their car so that it's there at the end of the race. How hard is that for you to do with the competition being as tight as it is?
I don't think it's very difficult for me at this stage of racing. When I first started running junior late models and my first year of pro late models back in 2019, definitely I was always lap one, go 100%, and it would end up biting me at the end of the race. Everyone was a lot faster, and I didn't know what was going on. And then when I first ran the SRL series last year, after, like, the first couple of races, I finally figured out what I was doing wrong. And as the end of the year came by, I was just this close to beating Jeremy Doss. a lot of races I was within a car length, two car lengths. So going into this race, I have my mindset on what I need to do to execute in the race, which is pretty much saving from lap one. A lot of those guys, a lot of the younger guys are going to just push from lap one, and by lap 25, lap 30, they're going to be sideways, and there's still 30 laps to go, and that could take a long time. So I just need to keep the mindset of what I need to do inside the race car and to tell my dad what I need changes done to the car during practice on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like you already have that lesson in your pocket, and I think it will help you in the long run. You talked about your dad. Your dad is your crew chief for you?
Yeah, just my dad is the only crew chief, and he crew chiefs both cars. And
wow.
Just working on the race car every single day, it's helping me be kind of like a second crew chief. Like when he's making adjustments, I'm asking him what that's going to do. So when I show up to the racetrack and it's doing something, I can tell him, oh, hey, let's try this. And he runs it through his mind. He's like, okay, he doesn't have to second guess himself. He can just think of it and be like, okay, that's going to work. And we can go and get right back out on the racetrack so we don't miss any practice time.
Yeah, that's a big part of being a race car driver is being able to give the right feedback to your crew chief so that they can get the car set up the way you need it to be able to contend. So that's great experience that you're getting, Dylan. I'm really glad to hear you say that you're being very actively involved in that process. Looking at the schedule and the races that are coming up, I know you race at Kern County, you race at Irwindale. What tracks are the best tracks for you and your driving style? Let me ask you that one.
Stockton 99 Speedway is I love that track. Nice little tight racing, really brings the driver out of you when you race that track. That track is also like Irwindale. You got to conserve your tires. Even in a 60 lap race, you can't go hard on lap one. You got to conserve and wait till the last 20 to go. So I'm looking forward to running at Stockton, but we don't get to race at Roseville anymore, which is a little bit of a bummer. I love All-American Speedway, so It's a bit of a bummer that we already ran there. We got the win there, so I love All-American Speedway. Just Irwindale Speedway, I'm looking forward to getting back out there on the half-mile track. That track was awesome. 3-4 groove racing. You don't see that at most tracks, and so just looking forward to getting back at Irwindale Stockton and also Kern County Raceway.
Okay. Sal, did you have any other questions for Dylan?
Yeah, I just had really one more question. With the upcoming race at Irwindale, you're going to be doing double duty. You're going to be doing your pro late and your super late. How are you going to prepare for the two different dynamics of the cars, you know, especially I think this time around they're running the prolates on the third mile and they're running the supers always run the half mile, but I know for the All-Star Showdown they ran the half mile. So how much of a difference is it going to be to make the adjustment from the third mile to the half mile into the super late?
I'm not entirely sure yet. I've never ran a super late model, so I don't know the difference in the steering, tires. I'm going to have to figure that all out when I get in the car for the first time, and then I can figure out what I need to do. But Jeremy Doss did it last year, so he made it look pretty easy, but he's always ran a super late model. So I'm going to ask Jeremy Doss for a couple pointers, and Derek Thorne maybe might ask him. Dustin Ash, he's going to be my teammate at that race, and he runs pro late also. So I'll just ask a couple of those guys for some pointers and see where it takes us that weekend.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Dustin is, since it's going to be an SPS car, you know, Dustin will be, and Dustin's really good with, you know, with helping out the younger drivers, like you said, as well as Derek, you know, Derek is really helpful too. And, you know, of course, Jeremy, you know, he's going to be a big help. So, I mean, you're going to have three drivers there. Plus if Joe Fahrey's there, you're going to have four really good driver coaches, you know, help you get around the track and learn. I'm sure, you know, you'll spend a lot of time out on practice on Friday, you know, the day before the race.
Yeah, we'll be making a lot of laps on Friday, just getting used to the car, getting used to what the tires are going to feel like on a long run. So I'm looking forward to getting out there in 2 weeks and see what we can do.
Well, Dylan, we're coming to the end of the segment. Is there any shout-outs, you know, that you want to give, whether it be sponsors, you know, your team, anything like that? And then we also want to let us know your social media where the listeners can follow you.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Facebook at Dylan Zampa. You can follow me on Twitter at Zampa_Dylan. And on Instagram, you can follow me at Dylan_Zampa. And I'd like to thank Anderson Logging, PSB Brakes, Sierra Speed Technology, Ride On Motorsports, Gone Fishing Marine, J-Squared Performance, All Pro Coatings, just everyone on board, especially my mom and dad, Joe, my brother, just everyone that's on board. Can't do it without them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and hopefully, you'll get your win pretty soon. You know, we can get you back on. But next time we go to Disneyland, I'm taking a step ladder because I'm going to climb up in that hole that you jumped out of that night, and I'm going to get you back for that night.
Sounds good.
All right.
Dylan, thanks.
All right.
Thanks for being on, Dylan.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That is Dylan Zampa. He is a pro late model driver in the SRL Spears Southwest Touring Series. So up-and-coming driver. And, you know, I'm really impressed with him and what he's able to do between himself, his brother, and his dad against some of the other teams that are more funded. They're really accomplishing a lot.
Oh yeah, they are. They've been around for a while. You know, he did the junior late model program up at Madera, and I know that just going through that program, you know, Kenny Shepherd really did a nice job through there. But with that last comment, real quick, we met them. Me and Sandy met the family up at Disneyland, and we were getting on Indiana Jones, and there's a lot of little crevices you can climb into. Well, Dylan's a small guy, so he was getting in there, and he got me a couple times, scared me. But the last time, I don't know how the heck, he got up like he was like 10, 12 feet off the ground in this little cubby hole. We were walking by, and he jumped out, and I was like, how the heck did he get up there? But anyway, so that's kind of why she got a little digging at the end. But back to
well,
the racing. Yeah.
Yeah, we're
going
to jump
awesome
into
job.
The Cup Series because we've only
let's
got
jump into it.
A little more than 10 minutes, huh?
I said, let's jump into it.
Okay. Race winner was Joey Logano, age 31, in the number 22 Shell Pennzoil Ford for Team Penske and crew chief Paul Wolf. It was his 28th victory in 483 Cup Series races, his first victory and sixth top 10 finish in 22, and his first victory and ninth top 10 finish in 17 races at Darlington Raceway. Tyler Reddick in second posted his second top 10 finish in six races at Darlington. It's his fifth top 10 finish this year. Justin Haley, third, posted his first top 10 finish in three races at Darlington Raceway. And Harrison Burton, who finished 14th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, just to kind of go over how this race finished out, there's been a lot of talk about it. Joey Logano bumps his way to the NASCAR Cup Series victory at Darlington. William Byron was not happy. His comment was, yeah, he's just a moron. He can't win a race, so he does it that way. I don't know, Will. Yeah, it was close racing on the restart. We were faster than him. Obviously, at the end, the right rear of Byron's car started to go away, and yeah, he didn't even make it to the contest. Justin Haley ran third, followed by Kevin Harvick, who posted his 10 results at the Lady in Black. That's a track record, by the way. Chase Elliott started at the rear of the field in a backup car, and he ended up finishing in fifth. The win, again, was his first of the year and the first at Darlington. Reddick actually finished second, followed by Justin Haley, Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott, Christopher Bell, Michael McDowell, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. with another top 10 finish. Austin Dillon and Daniel Suarez rounding out the top 10. Logano started from the pole. He led 8 times throughout the day. He took the lead for the final time, coming to the white flag after bumping the 24 of Byron from the lead. Stage 1 was won by Logano. Stage 2 by Ross Chastain. There were 24 lead changes among 13 drivers, 9 cautions for 47 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 119.158 miles per hour. The gap between first and second was actually 0.775 seconds. Your thoughts there about the top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, you know, it was a, you know, like you said, you know, of course, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the bump, you know, from, you know, from Joey, even though he was faster, he could have went around him. But, you know, it is what it is. It's racing. I'm sure that William Byron forgot on the restart, you know, when he pinched Joey up against the wall, you know, it almost caused him to wreck. You know, they don't remember things like that. But either way, you know, when you talk about the top 10, you know, seeing, you know, Joey finally, you know, get the win. He's always wanted the win there at Darlington. You know, Tyler Reddick, gosh, what a run. But Justin Haley, you know, to grab that third place finish, you know, I know that was big for him and for, you know, all of his fans. You know, it's good to see Kevin Harvick, you know, up there in the top five also. You know, as far as the rest of the field, you know, Kyle Busch had a really strong car. You know, gosh, I felt bad for Brad, you know, when he wrecked, he didn't mean to wreck him, you know, when he wrecked him. But I thought it was funny that Kyle just pulled the car and ran at the, you know, at the end of pit road and left it there and walked the rest of the way, you know. You know, I guess, like they said, he remembered what happened last year when he, same thing happened. He drove through the pit area, you know, and took out all the cones. But all in all, it was a good race, you know, a lot of passing, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of action. I'll tell you that.
Yes,
you know, a lot of crying. Bubba Wallace come out of the infield care center crying, you know, oh, I don't know, you know, the racing gods don't like me, you know, and.
Oh, dear.
You know, it's,
well,
you know.
There was a big accident.
Oh, well.
A lot of cars were taken out by accidents. Daniel Hemric had an engine issue. BJ McLeod had a brake issue. Kyle Larson had an engine issue. Took him out of the race. And then I think there were several other drivers caught up in accidents, including Eric Jones, Cole Custer, Bubba Wallace, Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman, and Ross Chastain, as well as Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and Corey LaJoy. So some big names on that list taken out of the race because of the big one at Darlington.
Oh, yes. You know, it was, yeah, the big one at Darlington. But, you know, there was a story that I kind of wanted to share, and it was I can't find it, but I can kind of add a little bit real quick. I guess there was an 85-year-old woman who had been wanting to go to a race for a long time, and somebody put it on Twitter, and I guess Kyle Busch read it, and he went and sent her and her family. They're going to go to the Richmond race. But he's got them on passes and everything for the race. Did you read that story?
No, I didn't see that story. That is an awesome story. Kyle Busch does so many things like that are so cool.
Yeah.
He does have a heart.
Yeah, and it was. Yeah, he does. You know, but it was she's an 85-year-old woman. You know, and couldn't afford to go to any racing. She wanted to go to race, so he went and he read it. She put it on Twitter. And one of the other media guys sent it to Kyle's Twitter page, and he told Kyle, he goes, I know you don't read our, you don't like us media guys anyway, so you probably won't read this. But he read it, and he went back on Twitter, and he went to social media, and he hunted the lady down to find her and finally found her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he found her on social media, then that's when he told her, he goes, you and your family are going to, you know, as a guest of Toyota, you guys will be at the, you guys are coming to the Richmond race with hot passes.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool. So many great stories like that from Kyle Busch, but we're going to run out of time. Yes. So I want to make sure that we talk about the point standings here.
Oh yeah, I'm already.
Thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah, I figured we had a couple seconds. So, anyways,
yeah,
so the point standings.
Okay.
Is Chase Elliott still leading the points? William Byron in second, Ryan Blaney in third, Joey Logano fourth, Ross Chastain, man, in fifth, Kyle Busch sixth, Martin Truex Jr. seventh, and Alex Bowman round out the top eight. And then from there, then we go to Kyle Larson ninth, Christopher Bell 10th, Kevin Harvick 11th, Eric Almirola 12th, Chase Briscoe 13th, 14th is Austin Dillon, 15th is Tyler Reddick, and 16th is Eric Jones, is the number 43.
Okay.
And actually,
yeah,
William Byron and Ryan Blaney are still tied.
Oh, wow. Isn't that amazing?
And there's a three-way tie. For Ross Chastain, Kyle Busch, and Mark Truex, all have 364 points.
Okay, and that's for that fifth, sixth, and seventh spot.
And
yeah,
then the 13th
really
and 14th.
Tight.
Yeah, 13th and 14th, Chase Briscoe and Austin Dillon with 287 points each.
Wow. Yeah, this is – and just 1 point behind hit them is Tyler Reddick, just 1 point back. So 4 point back,
yeah,
is Eric Jones. So that's really tight at the bottom of the bubble there. At the top of the bubble, I should say. William Byron has his two victories, giving him 13 playoff points, and Ross Chastain with two victories has 12 playoff points. So those guys have the highest playoff points here by virtue of their two wins. So,
and no one expected this from Ross Chastain.
I know.
You know.
We followed Ross Chastain for a long time, Sal. And it's really good to see him finally getting some time to shine.
Oh, yeah. He's been running good in all three series, especially in the Cup Series where it counts. You know, and to be fifth in points, he's already locked into the chase, so. You know, now it's just a matter of just racking up those playoff points, you know, this way he can make it all the way into Phoenix.
Exactly. One thing I've noticed is we are starting to see some of the more veteran drivers kind of start to do better with this new car. You mentioned Kevin Harvick getting that top five finish. He had a top five finish. So Kevin Harvick was there. Michael McDowell finished in seventh place. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in eighth. Daniel Suarez with a top 10, Joey Logano with the victory. I know some people question that, but a lot of these guys are starting to figure this car out, and I kind of thought it would happen where they would do better in the second half of the season, so it's good to see that. You're going to be at Disney World this weekend, right?
Yeah, I'll be on vacation this weekend.
Okay, so no racetracks for you this weekend. I hope you enjoy your time with Sandy, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Jay's already said that he'll co-host on Monday, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Enjoy your vacation.
All right. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Take care now. Be safe.
Okay. Okay. Goodbye. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. It is at the top of the hour, and that means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topics sound-off. And I know that we have Michael Orzel here. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, good to be back.
Also here is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Happy to be here as well. Glad to hear that Mike is back. I know it's been a while since we've had him on, so.
Well, I think it's just going to be the three of us tonight. I haven't heard from Tommy, and I know Andy is working tonight. So we'll go ahead and get into our NASCAR Hot Topic sound off here. Jay, I'm going to go ahead and start with you tonight. We don't usually get to start with you, so let's do it tonight.
Well, Sharon, you might want to, I heard you just mention it to Sal. You know it's going to come up, so I'll be the one to bring it up. The bump and run happened again here at Darlington. Maybe a little bit different reasoning or circumstances in this case, but it definitely happened.
It definitely happened. Okay, Mike, your thoughts.
I've got to temper my reply here because I know I wrote an article last year about drivers whining about not getting respect on the racetrack and whatnot. So I've got to make sure I don't step on my own toes here. However, I will say that I've noticed kind of a troubling trend, not just in the Cup Series, but really in all three major series, that if you are leading at the end of a NASCAR race, whether it be the Cup Series, the Xfinity Series, or the Truck Series, and the second place guy is within striking distance of you, you're going to get struck. And I'm kind of concerned that that has become the norm as opposed to the exception. Not just this past weekend where we saw Joey Logano dump William Byron on the last lap for the lead. We also saw Chase Briscoe absolutely clean out Tyler Reddick at Bristol. And there's been several instances before that where the leader who took the white flag gets taken out by the guy in second place. Sometimes the second place guy goes on to take the win like Joey Logano did. Sometimes in the case of Briscoe and Reddick, they take them both out and Kyle Busch ends up stealing the win. But I'm kind of concerned about this trend of that's just the way it is anymore, is we're just going to hit the guy and knock him out of the way. I get that Joey Logano felt that he was wronged by William Byron early in the race. I know what he's talking about in terms of what incident on the track he's referring to, whether that was worthy of just running over the guy, because he didn't even make an attempt to pass him. He just flat ran him over and stuffed him in the fence. Whether that was justified or not, I don't know. But I think, you know, the pendulums tend to swing one way or the other, right? Back in the mid-2000s, NASCAR would black flag guys for aggressive driving, and the fans didn't like that, and there was a lot of complaints about it. So NASCAR went to the boys have at it kind of thing. But I think the pendulum may have swung just a little far in the other direction, where boys have at it has become let's dump the leader every single race just about. And I don't know that that's really the answer either. I don't think we're at the point where NASCAR needs to get involved and start issuing penalties. But I think, I don't know what the solution is, to be honest with you, but I think there's definitely discussion that needs to be had about maybe it shouldn't be the norm to just make contact with the leader on the last lap and take him out on every single race.
Well, well, well. You guys are going to be a little surprised with what I'm going to say here. It's a conundrum because when these things happen, people are talking, and when people are talking, they want to tune in to the next race to see what happens next. I am not a fan, and I've made it known, I don't care who the driver is, I'm not a fan of the bump and run as a way of winning a race. I think it's a bad look for the premier series of our sport. I think that these drivers are talented, and they need to display their talent on the track. Joe Logano could have done that in this race, but he felt he was wronged, and because he felt he was wronged, and when he was trying to take the lead from William Byron, William Byron squeezed him into the wall, and he lost his momentum and didn't get the lead at that point. So he had it in his mind that that opened the door for him to make the next move and take William Byron out of contention. So both cars lost their momentum. Both cars fell back. I listened to Ryan Blaney today, and Ryan Blaney said part of the problem is that there is so much pressure on these drivers to make it into the playoffs. In this case, William Byron has 2 wins. Joey Logano has none. And that was part of his motivation as well. And we've heard it from drivers like Ty Gibbs. We've heard it now from Joey Logano, and other drivers have said this. I had to do it. I don't necessarily agree with that, but from their perspective, that's the way they're looking at it. They don't care how they win the race. And I've heard Justin Marks, I've heard a lot of team owners say that's the kind of driver that they want to have behind the wheel of their cars. A driver who wants that win so badly, he's going to do whatever he has to do to get that win. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in today. Again, I find it's a little bit of a bad look for the most talented drivers within NASCAR, and I'm not happy about it. Okay, my dog is chewing on something. I'm trying to figure out what it is. Anyway, I don't think it's the best look for our sport, but what it is doing is it is bringing people to our sport. So that's a conundrum that NASCAR has here. People are talking about it. People are doing, they're going to these races because they want to see what's going to happen next. They want to see if their driver's going to make it into the playoffs. Sponsors want their drivers in the playoffs. And I don't know what the answer is to fix this at this point. But I do know that it is what it is. I don't know what more I can say about it. I'm going to have more in the follow-up. But, Jay, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think first off, I don't think you can lump all of them together. Mike mentioned the Bristol race, Ty Gibbs in his race. I don't think you can lump all of them together. Each one is kind of a separate situation. In this case, Joey Logano doesn't have a win yet on the year. You mentioned William Byron has two. The closing rate, William Byron's tires and car was going away and slowing down. Joey was gaining on him. Initially, I just thought that he got that great a run, and Byron kind of came low to block the door, and Joey got into him. That clearly wasn't the case. Then you go back and look at, okay, Joey felt justified in it. Looking at that, it did appear as though William Byron ran him up the wall and pinched him into the wall. He felt payback. What I don't particularly like, I understand what you're sharing, you're coming from. In this case, it was 2 laps to go. Joey could have at least made an attempt to get around him clean because he had clearly had the better car. He let that little bit of red get in his eyes when he saw that bumper and he saw his chance. Because I do think, given that 2 laps to go, he certainly could have gotten around him clean and gone on and won the race anyway. So, yeah, that's one of those of maybe if you can control that. Now, had it been white flag, last corner coming around, and he says that same opportunity. And I do think he executed the bump and run itself good. He gave him a nudge. Byron went up the track. Joey drove under him. Didn't run him over, didn't wreck him. And that's why I say you go back to Chase Briscoe's. Briscoe's didn't run him over. He made a bad move that didn't hold, and then it collected him. So that's why I say it's different for every situation. So, and I can't say Joey whether he was justified or not. He felt he got run into there, and he was going for his first win of the year. His win at the Coliseum wasn't a points race, so he wasn't technically locked into the playoffs. And you mentioned it, Sharon, all the sponsors, owners, all of that, it comes down to that's what you got to do.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up?
Yeah, Jay brings up a really good point. Each one is a unique circumstance. There haven't been a lot of repeat offenders. You can kind of say that Ty Gibbs is starting to become a repeater on this. Ross Chastain, he's definitely known for roughing some people up. But in terms of the last lap contact for the pass for the win, there's not a whole lot of repeat offenders on there. And like you said, Jay, every circumstance is different. You got to take into account what each person is racing for and whatnot. For example, Coda, Ross Chastain's racing for his first win ever. AJ Allmendinger racing in one of his rare Cup Series opportunities. And then same thing at Bristol. While I was not as pleased with Chase Briscoe for what he did, because Briscoe already had a win. He took the opportunity away from Reddick, who did not have a win yet, not just in the season, but in his career. He took them both out for really nothing to be gained minus, you know, okay, yeah, obviously a race win is always a nice thing, but Briscoe already has one. He took Reddick's opportunity away. And, oh, by the way, how bad has Tyler Reddick wished he had that win in his back pocket after the disasters that he's had at Talladega and Dover, especially? Darlington was a little bit of a rebound, but since missing that opportunity at Bristol, Tyler Reddick has really had a rough go of it. So how big of a deal is losing that opportunity for a win at Bristol because of the contact that was made on the last lap there? So, yes, we need to look at him in context. We need to look at him individually. But, Sharon, you like to talk a lot about the culture and how certain things become culturally accepted, mm-hmm. or they need to become culturally unacceptable. And in this case, mm-hmm. I think just culturally speaking, it has become maybe a little bit too accepted to not even try to pass the leader cleanly on the last lap or the last couple of laps and just go straight to making that contact, send the leader up the track, and move your way on by. Even if you don't end up taking that guy out, yeah, the bump and run is kind of a classic maneuver, especially on the short tracks. And I'm not saying it needs to be banned. Like I said on my previous reply, I don't think we're at the point where NASCAR needs to take official enforcement action. But I think from a cultural standpoint, maybe we need to kind of swing that pendulum back the other way, where there's at least an attempt to not make contact with the leader. Don't use the leader's four tires combined with your four to try and make a corner that you otherwise have no chance of making, stuff like that. And maybe put a little bit more of the racing back in the race on the last laps, as opposed to just make contact, send the guy, and maybe get by if you don't take yourself out in the process. I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what both of you have said here. Not every situation is exactly the same. In this situation, though, I wish Joey Logano would have taken the higher ground here, gone for the win without the bump and run, and then had a private conversation with William Byron about squeezing him up. I think he might have gained a lot of fans had he'd done that. Instead, he's going to get booed, which I guess that's not a big deal. But I think that we have to remember part of the reason why Joey Logano is a no apologetics kind of person for the bump and run move. Because when he first came into the sport and he was in the Cup Series, he was a young driver and he got pushed around by the veterans quite a bit. And at some point, he had to take a stand and say, I'm not going to be pushed around anymore. And I think it was at that point that Joey Logano said, if you do it to me, you better expect it back, because it's going to happen. If you push me up into the wall, then you've opened the door for me to make the next move. And that's exactly what he did here. Do I wish it would have been different? Yeah, I wish it would have been different. But I've said that, but it wasn't. And you got to think about who Joey Logano is. Do I think it was the right thing to do? No, not necessarily. I think he could have handled it differently. But I think there's some history here that kind of goes into the decision that he made. Joey Logano could have won that race without doing a bump and run. And I think about some of the races that we've watched. I remember Kurt Busch and Ricky Craven coming to the finish line side by side, bumping and banging all the way finish line. I think that was at Darlington. And that was an exciting finish. We were cheated of that kind of a finish this weekend at Darlington Raceway. He could have made it that kind of a finish that's very, very exciting to watch. So the bump and run does not make it more exciting for me. For me, it would have been more exciting to see the side-by-side bumping and banging all the way to the finish line. That I know I've seen it, and it is exciting when that happens. People are standing and on their feet for those kind of finishes. And you don't know who's going to be the one to get across that finish line at the end. And I think we were cheated of that kind of a finish this weekend as a race fan. And I'm a race fan. I'm not a bump and run fan. I am a race fan. I want to see them all out going for that finish at the end of the race. And I think we were cheated of that this weekend. Jay, you brought up a good point too, the fact that not all of these are the same, the situations with the bump and the run. Chase Briscoe obviously was an accident. I don't think he intentionally took out anybody. It ended up being that way, the post racing that they were doing. But I don't think it was an intentional thing on his part. Ty Dillon, that was intentional. He said he had to do it. But I do think, just like we said with Ty Dillon, I think that Joey Logano has to show me that he's a bigger man than that. He needs to go out there and win these races without that bump and run, because it's becoming, as Mike said, more of a habit and more of an expectation. But again, William Byron, when he squeezed him up and through the wall, it should have been no surprise to him of what happened when Joey Logano made his move. So again, I find myself on both sides of this. I've been thinking about it all day today, and I find myself on both sides of this. I can argue either side of it, but I understand why William Byron was angry. He had every right to be angry. But Joey Logano was angry too when he got pushed up into the wall. He had every right to be angry. So it's one of those things. I wish it wasn't becoming an every week occurrence. I wish the drivers would showcase their talent more. And I do feel that the fans were cheated of a really close side-by-side finish this weekend with Darlington. Jay?
Yeah, you bring up the Ricky Craven, Kurt Busch, and that has to be top five, if not the top three, top five of all-time finishes. And had something happen there where one of them got taken out, that is what you call a racing incident due to just hard side-by-side racing. Okay, this situation at Bristol with Briscoe kind of falls into that category. It's questionable if that move would have even possibly worked. You had to almost expect it. Maybe he shouldn't have done it. But like you said, it wasn't a direct hit to try and take him out or move him. With Joey, and he said it, had the situation with Byron not happened earlier in the race, he would have went by him clean. Do we know if that would have happened? No, we don't. Does Joey's reputation lead you to believe that? Maybe not.
No.
But with the car the way it was, I do think had he not had that red in his eyes, that he would have, because he clearly had been catching them and had two laps to do so. So I think that is one. Yes, we would have liked to have seen the driver, like you said, show a little more maturity, take the higher road. And we've seen drivers that will do it. There are ones, and I'll get to that in a second, of the just aggressive nature. The key thing I heard on the radio this morning was when it happened with the situation happened with Byron, they said he got run into the wall. Joey never said, hey, I'm going to go get this guy. There was no, hey, go take him out or find your opportunity. It was just logged in the back of his head. I mean, that, hey, I owe him one. And that came back to the forefront as he was coming there in those final laps. So I think that was a big difference when you hear the driver say, okay, I'm going to go get this guy. That's now their intent. So I'm not a fan of that, because then you have the situation. And I think Joey learned a lot when we go back to him and Matt Kenseth. He had hit Kenseth to get the win at Kansas, which is coming up next week, ironically. Kenseth retaliated at Martinsville. I think Joey learned a lot there. with that. So I personally do at least a little 50-50 believe that Joey would have passed him clean had he not had that frustration from earlier in that particular race to boot. Now going to the driver.
Well, now Byron thinks he owes him back.
Well, and that's, you know, that's one of those of, I know I heard, I saw where Jeff Gordon talked to him, tried to,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say dissuade him, but at least calm him down. It's one of those of, look, big picture, if we're going to run for the championship, they obviously could have multiple wins this year. They already got two. They could have had a couple more. And where their team is at, hopefully Jeff Gordon and Rick Hendrick can say, hey, let's look at the big picture. Do we want to feud with Joey or do we want to run for the championship? So that comes into play. When you mentioned the drivers with the aggressive nature and owners wanting that, I don't know that they want to see a driver that'll go out there and run over somebody every week. However, when Mike was talking about it, Byron has two wins, Joey doesn't have any. If the roles were reversed, I don't want a driver that's going to go, oh, I got two wins in the bank, I'm going to let this guy get his first win. That's right. Where you don't want a driver that's going to ride like that, especially if you got the car. Now, Mark Martin, Martin Truex are the two that come to my mind. If they don't have the car to pass him and pass him clean, and I think of Martin Truex and Joey Logano at Martinsville a couple of years back. Martin worked for lap after lap after lap after lap to work his way under Joey, got by him. Joey didn't return that same respect and favor, and I don't know there if he felt Martin had rubbed him wrong. From my viewpoint, Martin ran very hard and very clean. Joey not so much going into that next corner to get the lead back. So that's one I understand where fans may not believe him when he says he would race him the way he raced. I understand that. But like I said, I don't know that owners are looking for him to run over everybody, win at all costs, but certainly not be passive enough to say, okay, he needs his first win. I'm going to let him have it. I'm not going to even try and push it or race him hard side by side. You know, like with Chase Briscoe, he took the shot. It didn't work, and I don't know that it ever would have, but he took it. And I understand that kind of, you want to see that kind of passion in it.
Let me ask you guys a question, because you're right. They're looking for the passion. But let me ask you a question. What if it was reversed? What if it was Joey Logano that pushed Byron up into the wall, and then at the end of the race, it was William Byron that did the bump and run to get the win? Would that change your perspective of how that played out, Mike?
Well, tough to say. Obviously, we're it depends on what you're looking at. If you're looking at, well, now we've got a guy that has two wins who just dumped the guy who has zero wins, we're right back to the discussion that we had before. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know that William Byron has it in him to dump anybody for a win. He might now. We saw that, like you said earlier with Joey Logano.
Well, he Logano up into the wall.
Well, that's true. He did kind of pinch Logano up in there, but that was kind of more of a defending against the rest of the pack kind of a thing versus a one versus one. So I don't know. You're right. He did kind of pinch Logano earlier. I think William Byron is starting to come into his own as a race car driver as well, and he's right about at that same point in his career that Logano was when Logano says, you're not going to be pushing me around anymore. This may be the weekend that we start seeing a different William Byron after this. So I don't know. Back to your original question of if the roles were reversed, objectively, I'd like to say that I have the same criticism for William Byron, but I don't know. We're not in that position. So I'm going to leave it as gray as I possibly can for you.
Okay. That's pretty noncommittal. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah. Going into this weekend, I would have to say, like Mike said, we haven't seen, I'm not going to say Byron hasn't ever bumped anybody, but we haven't seen that super aggression. So I would have to say probably no. Mike hit on it. Following this weekend, maybe, maybe not, if that changes. But like I said, I think Jeff Gordon is one that can talk to him. And having been through it, and Jeff Gordon certainly had his moments, there's always situations where, you know, it is a need, or I don't know if need is the right word, but where it's going to happen. But especially with the way they are running this year, I think they're going to say, hey, look, we are running top five every week. Let's not worry about him. I know Chase Elliott kind of had that with Harvick. He still had his moment, but they went at it as a whole. Hey, we're in the playoffs. We're moving on. You're not. You're not going to be my worry. My focus is the championship. So I think that's where they need to kind of focus him. But I understand if he were to now become a little more aggressive, especially with Joey Logano, you can't blame him.
Yeah, I don't think we would have been talking about it in the same vein as we're talking about it as it was. Joey Logano has a reputation of, you know, I'm going to race you the race you waste me. I'm not going to let anybody take me out of an opportunity to win a race kind of attitude. Again, he's very unapologetic for racing people the way he feels like he's been raced. There are exceptions, and Jay, you brought up a good one with Martin Truex Jr. that time. He raced him clean, and he still bumped him out. So I think that Logano does have a reputation of being that kind of a driver. William Byron does not. So I think we would have looked at it differently just based on that fact alone. But I think moving forward, I would like to see Joey Logano not have to go for payback every single time, because unfortunately, I think what happened to him with Kenseth could happen with him again with William Byron. And I heard Gordon say that in a video that I saw on Twitter. He did say Joey Logano's got one coming to him. So I think that they're going to look for that opportunity. And I fully expect that somewhere down the road, they're going to look for that opportunity for payback to Joey Logano. And that's the problem with these bump and runs. That's the problem with racing each other as aggressively as they've been racing one another, is that everybody always feels that they've got a payback to give. So I wish we could get away from it. It doesn't seem like we're going to at any time in the near future, but I would have liked to have seen a cleaner race there. But I guess at a short track, it is what it is. Okay, so Mike, you get the next hot topic.
You want to do your announcement first?
Oh, thank you. Oh, my gosh, we're already there. Okay, for our first-time listeners, thank you, Mike. For our first-time listeners, we're liking to make an announcement at this time of the night, just so you're not caught off guard and not know what to do to hear the rest of our conversation. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we're going to continue our conversation. So when we go off the air, we're going to be mid-sentence, more likely than not. And for those who are listening for the first time, we continue to record that conversation as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. I will go out on Twitter and let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to our player at fanforracing.com and just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation bonus overtime material. Again, I don't want anybody to be caught off guard saying, what happened? How do I hear the rest of this? That's our process for folks to hear that bonus overtime material. Okay, so with that, Mike, I guess we're ready to move on here with the next hot topic.
Sure, and I'm not going to back away from the controversial ones. Let's talk about the other big controversy from yesterday. Kyle Busch was involved in an on-track incident later in the race, had some damage to his car that ended up being beyond what was fixable, and the team decided not to continue. Kyle Busch took his car most of the way down pit road, stopped it at more or less an entrance into the garage, got out of his car, and just walked away. And there was some speculation on whether that is a penalty-worthy offense or not. So I've got my opinion, but let's take it from there.
Okay, Jay.
Well, first off, I got to say, I made a mistake that I personally don't like that I did. I jumped on this with only having part of the story. I hadn't watched the race yet. I saw a video clip on Twitter, and yeah, Kyle Busch appeared to be doing Kyle Busch things. However, if you watch the race and watch the situation through and understand the full story to it, it's not as much of that as what I thought. Kyle Busch obviously
and you gotta look
was
at
still
the history
being Kyle.
Too.
What's that?
You got to look at the history too.
Right, and there is some history that does come into play. You're right. Let me hit on that. So, like I said, Kyle was still obviously upset and kind of having a tantrum. I get that. However, there's another tweet out now with the car damage. He said the car wouldn't turn and he couldn't go no more. That's a very good possibility. Can't say whether it's true or not. I'm not the one driving the car. I don't know. The history of that track in that particular spot, I believe it is the exact same spot. Last year he got in trouble for driving it into the garage. Granted, it was a little excessive in speed, but he ran over some cones and was fined $15,000 for a safety issue. That had to come into play because it was right there, and I didn't see if the cones were set up. I saw them alongside, so I don't know if somebody had moved those after he had come to a stop to allow him in or not, but that comes into play. So I don't think it was as egregious as what everybody started to say. And I was part of that. Like I said, I don't like the fact that I didn't get the whole story. Do I still think he could have handled it better? Absolutely. We know that, just like Joey. He could have done it differently. Is it outright as ugly as it was last year when he just ripped through there? No, there was some reason for it. The car was damaged, and there was a history of going in there where running over cones and putting people in a risk way. So I think that needs to be looked at. But that goes back to the driver has built a reputation. So, you know, part of that comes with it. It's Kyle Busch. Oh, automatically your first thought is, oh, it's Kyle Busch being Kyle Busch. So that's kind of what drags you in to begin with is of who it is.
That's true. And you're right. Last year he got in trouble for knocking down those cones when he went into the track. And he saw the cones. He said he saw the cones. He didn't want to repeat the same mistake that he made last year, so he stopped the car. He couldn't turn it anyway. He stopped and got out of his car and walked back to his hauler to change clothes. He went to the medical center and then came out and talked to the media. There is precedent for this. Other drivers have had similar situations where their car could not move any further. They stopped it. There was a picture of Alex Bowman's car on pit road where he got out of the car and did exactly the same thing. He couldn't go any further. He got out of the car and he walked to the hauler and did exactly the same thing. So I don't think Kyle Busch did anything that was out of the ordinary, if you will. I've seen other drivers have cars that could not go any further, and that's what they did. I do think that there was a rush to judgment just based on the fact that it was Kyle Busch, that somehow he was being Kyle Busch, for lack of a better way of saying that. Because, again, Kyle Busch has a reputation that precedes him. And, excuse me, a lot of times fans on Twitter do jump to conclusions. We had a situation last week where there were some conclusions that were drawn on Teresa Earnhardt, and she never did what everybody was accusing her of doing. And yet she took a lot of the blame for something that never happened. So we do know that fans have a tendency to do that. And I think Kyle Busch is the victim of that this week with the car situation. So I think that we do need to just kind of take some time, wait for all the facts to come out before we kind of jump conclusion with what drivers are doing or not doing on the track. So I know, Mike, you have a different perspective on this, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, here comes my different perspective. Yes, I do think that this merits a penalty for a couple reasons. Objectively, I'm kind of paraphrasing the rule book here, but drivers are not allowed to get out of their car without first being seen by track safety officials. If
the
car is unable to continue. Well, he was still
on
the
track.
He was on the hot side of the pit wall. Right, but he was on the hot side of pit road. That's still considered the hot part of the racetrack. You're right, that's a bit of a gray area.
That's your interpretation.
However, well, we'll see what NASCAR says here tomorrow or Wednesday. The other bit of it, we've talked about before in previous shows, where it's on NASCAR's radar where they want to streamline the caution process and eliminate unnecessary time under caution. Well, Kyle Busch abandoning his car on a hot side of pit road caused them to have to add two or three extra laps under yellow to get that car out of the way without having the driver around there to do anything about it. I don't know that he could have moved it further or not, or they could have told him to continue down pit road and move it into his pit stall so at least it's out of the way of other cars who were going to be on pit road. But him abandoning the car on the hot side of pit road and just basically throwing the keys in the bushes and walking away, that forced NASCAR's hand to extend the caution period for several more laps with pit road closed, which is the direct opposite of one of NASCAR's stated intentions of improving efficiency under caution. So I think that's two reasons that this needs a pretty good look at it. And we talked about before we're not talking about a rookie driver who might not know better. We're talking about Kyle Busch. He's been in the series for 15-plus years. He has no excuse to say, well, I didn't know any better. He knows better. This is not the first, probably not the last, temper tantrum that Kyle Busch has had, and he does what he thinks is reasonable at the time in his fit of anger, whether it's abandoning the car on the hot side of pit road or showing the social finger to the NASCAR official holding him in his pit stall for a penalty or wrecking Ron Hornaday under caution or blasting in through a row of cones into pit road at about 25, 30 miles an hour. All those seem reasonable to Kyle Busch at that time, and he has an explanation for it at that time. And as soon as any kind of objectivity and examination comes down to it, no, it's just Kyle Busch being an immature jerk. And that has to be taken into account here. If he didn't have such a long history of doing things like this, it'd be a different story. But at this point, it's a story of a guy who just has not gotten the message and needs to get another rendition of the message read to him. And I think that is where we're at right now with regards to this one. Yes, maybe there could be some construing to say, oh, well, he was on pit road. He's still on the hot side of the racetrack. You can't just go wandering around out there. You can't just park equipment out there because it's obstructing his other competitors and the officials on the track from doing what they need to do. And I think that's what's going to end up needing to be addressed.
Okay, Jake.
Yeah, Mike does have a point there of the fact that there is a history with him, and we know that, not just from a fan perspective, but then, and I'll let Sharon, I'll let you do your spiel, that there's a pattern, okay? So, yeah, maybe it does, had it been somebody, it's their first time, that verbal warning, hey, you made a mistake, okay? This one was a repeat or similar to a repeat attitude issue. I don't agree with you, Mike, though, that the caution was lengthened because of that. If the car is broke there, it doesn't matter if the driver's with the car or not. They got to hook it up. They got to tow it off. So I don't think that affected time spent with the pit road closed. You're not going to have him, even if he'd have pulled it into his pit stall, you're not going to leave that car sit there. We'd have 15 cars sitting there throughout a race. They're not going to leave him sitting on pit road because that's part of the strategy when it comes to – if the car's out of the race, you have an open pit stall either in front of you or behind you. So they're not going to let the car sit there, do the pit stops, and then go get it. That's not going to happen. So I don't think that affected the actual length of the caution. And like I said from the beginning, yes, Kyle could have handled it better. There is no doubt about that. We can always do things better than what we've done them. If they give him a fine for, as you said, of leaving the car until he was checked, I understand that. If there is something of, hey, we've had this talk before of your actions and just in general, maybe not, that'll be up to them. But I do understand where you're saying that he is one that has had his warnings. It has happened before. He's had his warnings. So maybe it is time to elevate it.
Yeah, I have to agree with Jay. Imagine if Kyle Busch had stayed in his car, which you're recommending he should have done. It would not have shortened the caution. They still would have had to move the car because the car wasn't going to go anywhere. So I don't see where that lengthened the caution, him getting out of the car. If he had sat in the car, the caution would have had to been the same length of time. So I also agree that Kyle Busch does have a history. You're absolutely right about that. He's had inappropriate behavior in the past and over a number of years. NASCAR is going to have to look at that and make that decision, whether or not they think it's warranted of a penalty. And if it is, I don't think it's going to be a huge penalty, simply because if you look at what his thinking was, he couldn't go anywhere to begin with. But even if he could go somewhere, and he saw the cones, he did not want to be put in that position again either, because he was fined. Kyle is in a no-win situation, if you get my point here. He went in last year, took his car back to the garage, and was fined because he was being a hothead, and he did create a very unsafe situation. From his point of view, the safer thing to do was to let the car stay where it was and go take care of his business. Could he have handled it differently? Yeah, he maybe could have. He could have sat in his car, but it would not have shortened the caution. And he could have waited, but we would have had to wait that much longer probably for him to get to the infield care center to be seen and to talk to the media. I think NASCAR is going to look at the bigger picture here and make their decision based on that. So, Mike, your thoughts?
I don't think they're going to suspend him, or they need to really throw the book at him, L3 penalty style or anything like that, Adam. But I think there definitely needs to be a message, not just to Kyle Busch, but also reiterate to the drivers that there's a right and a wrong way to end your race. And just leaving the car is not the right way to do it. The proper way that this should have been handled, and this is what needs to be communicated to not just Kyle Busch, but to the entire field, is if Kyle Busch stops where he is, okay, that's fine. You wait in the car until either a safety team or a NASCAR official gets there. Hey, where do you want me to put the car? Official says, I want you to drive it over there. I can't drive it over there. It's broke. Okay, now you can get out of the car. That's all it takes. And it would have taken an extra minute or two before he got out of the car and stormed off. And it would have avoided any of this discussion. It would have avoided the bad optics. It would have avoided adding fuel to the Kyle Busch is just a temper tantrum waiting to happen kind of thing. But here we are. So having that moment of clarity and maturity, here's Kyle Busch at 30. I think he just turned 37 last week, and he's still not there. He's still got some maturity issues in terms of he's great when things are going well for him. But when things are not going his way, he still doesn't handle them very well. And I think this is a good example that can be used to not just, guide Kyle Busch back in the right direction, but also inform the rest of the drivers about what is and is not acceptable, even if your car is unable to continue in the race.
Okay. We'll go ahead and move on to the next hot topic then. Jay?
Oh, was that second time around already? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. Yep, that was the second time around.
All right, let me scroll.
Did you have something more you wanted to say?
Yeah, a little bit, Mike, and this is directly to Mike, not a personal attack, but a food for thought. Would that not be the same as somebody that doesn't get all the information, and even after they do, still wants to hate on somebody for no reason?
That's funny, because that same thought went through my mind.
Wait, are you referring to the Wicked Witch of the South? I will hate her every single time I have the opportunity, and I will spit before I say that woman's name.
Oh,
but you want
such
Kyle
a
Busch
mature
to grow, but you, yeah, exactly. You want Kyle Busch to grow up and show maturity when he just got wrecked out of a race, not of his doing. And I don't know that he'd blame Brad Keselowski. Brad had a bad day. It just happened in front of Kyle. I think he's just frustrated. He's worried, you know, whether he says he's not or not. He's worried about next year with the sponsorship and his contract. You know, they got a lot going on. I try to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, I'm not going to say he couldn't have handled it better, just like Joey Logano could have handled his race win better. But you got to give them understand the situation they're under. So I just wanted to throw that out there of everybody has room to grow with their maturity level.
Look, I can't even say her name because she'll swoop in on her broom and throw a cease and desist at me. So we'll just leave it at that.
Well, let's go to another topic. Then, what do you think about Noah Gregson possibly driving for Stuart Haas Racing? What is it? Beyond the Flag has one up as a dark horse replacement at Stuart Haas Racing, and Noah Gregson was possibly named, or was named as a possibility.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw the article Jay posted. Beyond the Flag, I don't know that they have any kind of insider information that says that this is anything other than just speculation. So if there's any kind of obviously we know nothing's been announced yet, but if there's anything more than just speculation, please let me know. But with that said, I don't see it anywhere near out of the realm of possibilities. Right now, Noah Gregson drives for Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. Obviously, Junior Motorsports is a Chevy development team that primarily leads to Hendrick Motorsports. Barring anything like an injury, unforeseen illness, something catastrophic and unforeseen like that, I don't think the Hendrick Motorsports driver lineup is going to change probably in the next decade. I think the four drivers that Hendrick Motorsports has in the Cup Series right now are probably the four best assembled drivers on any four-car team, maybe in NASCAR history. So I really don't think that anybody's sitting on the hot seat over at Hendrick right now with the chance of Noah Gregson swooping in and bumping them out of a ride. So that means that if Noah Gregson is to go to the Cup Series, he's got to go somewhere. He's made a few part-time starts for Beard Motorsports in the 62, as well as Colic Racing in the 16 car. I think he's got a couple more coming later this season as well with Colic. A full-time Colic ride might be a possibility, but the Stuart Haas Racing thing is intriguing. We already know that Eric Almirola is retiring out of the 10 car at the end of this year, so that's one opening. We've already started kind of penciling in Ryan Priest into that 10 car, knowing that Priest is kind of the backup driver for Stuart Haas, been doing a lot of development testing and has raced a few races with a Stuart Haas affiliated with wear number 15. So we know Priest is strongly affiliated with Stuart Haas Racing. We've kind of penciled him as a foregone conclusion, but even if Priest does end up in the 10 car, Kevin Harvick has what? Maybe one or two seasons left before he's going to retire. He's been talking openly about retiring for the past several years. So the fact that Kevin Harvick is, we don't know for sure that Kevin Harvick is coming back for the 2023 season. We do know his contract runs through the end of the 2023 season, but that hasn't stopped drivers from retiring before the end of their contract either. So we assume Kevin Harvick may return for the 2023 season. We don't know that for sure. But either way, that four car will be open here sooner rather than later. If not next year, probably the year after. So who is in Ford's development pipeline? Well, in the Xfinity Series, not many. You've got Riley Herbst driving the 98 car. I don't think any reasonable person would say Riley is ready to move up to the Cup Series. He's taken that 98 car backwards from the way, literally and figuratively, for when Chase Briscoe was driving the car. Cole Custer and Chase Briscoe have both driven Stuart Haas prepared Xfinity cars and generally run up front, if not win, with those cars. So it's not a question of whether SHR can still make a fast Xfinity car. That kind of says that Riley Herbst probably is not on a Cup Series trajectory. Who else is a Ford development driver in the Xfinity Series? Joe Graff Jr., I know he's a friend of the show, but I don't think he's ready to move up to the Cup Series yet. So that's not really a whole lot of, and Penske shut down their Xfinity operation, at least for the time being. So there's not really a whole lot of Ford development in the Xfinity Series. Haley Deegan was a prospect coming up in the Ford pipeline, but she's really hit the wall in the Truck Series. figuratively, sometimes literally, but figuratively speaking, she has not had the progression that we were hoping that we would see out of her coming into her second full-time season in the Truck Series. She's not there yet. Zane Smith, hot and cold, but he also kind of exposes Haley Deegan because he's running similar equipment to her but doing much better. Zane Smith may be a possibility, but he's only running the Truck Series. I don't know if he's ready to move up to the Cup Series. That comes back to, who can Stuart Haas get? Well, now we've got a Chevy development driver with nowhere to go in a Chevy. Noah Gregson is a very good candidate that might end up, if not in the 10 car at Stuart Haas, possibly as a candidate for the 4 car in the next season or two.
Okay. I think it is very important, and I know you did this, Mike, but I would just want to say this is all speculation. There is no firm information here. But you're right. This is something that is certainly possible. Gregson right now is racing with College Racing via Beard Motorsports in some select races. So I kind of saw him going that direction for College to kind of invest in him moving forward. But I suppose Stuart Haas Racing is a possibility. I just think that there are other possibilities as well. Now, this weekend, I just want to point out that Riley Herbst came home with a top three finish. He finished third, one of the more difficult tracks in the series. So I do see him starting to show some signs of improvement. I would like to see him stay in the Xfinity Series for another year. I don't think he's ready to move up to Cup Series just yet. And I think that he's gone through a learning curve, just like a lot of drivers have to go through a learning curve. Not all drivers are as talented as Chase Briscoe is. And Chase Briscoe is an extraordinarily talented race car driver, in my estimation. And I think that Riley Herbst has done his due diligence in trying to learn the craft of his racing in the Xfinity Series. And it is a big jump from the Truck Series to the Xfinity Series. Look at Sheldon Creed. Sheldon Creed hasn't been burning up any race wins this season either in the Xfinity Series. So I don't see him as the only driver that it takes a little bit of time. Cal Weatherman had a 12th place finish this week. So I see some good things from him after kind of a slow start in the series. So they are investing in Riley Herbst. I will say Riley Herbst and Noah Gregson have been buddies for a long, long time. They both come from Las Vegas. They both have raced the same circuits for a number of years, and it would be kind of cool to see Riley Herbst and Noah Gregson together in the same team. But I kind of see Noah Gregson on a trajectory with College Racing. Now, if he was offered the ride by Stuart Haas Racing, maybe he would jump at that opportunity. But College is the one that's really investing in him at this stage of the game. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. You're right. There's a number of scenarios. Drivers still have some developing to do, but I do think that we have a lot of drivers with a lot of potential. John Hunter Nemechek finally got a win. He's another driver that can be hot and cold sometimes. He got a win this week at Darlington. So we'll see what happens. To me, this is all speculation at this point. And Beyond the Flag, they're noted for that kind of stuff. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're 100% right. It is just an article about the possibility of it. But they make some key points. Mike made a key point. Gregson's been with Junior Motorsports, which leads to Hendrick Motorsports, and taking Mike's blinders away there. You can't argue that. They got a solid four-car team driver lineup, and it's looking to be that way for the future. So where does that leave Noah? He has been with College Racing, another Chevrolet team, but we've seen it in the past. Harrison Burton was Toyota all along, all of a sudden makes the jump to the Wood Brothers Ford.
Exactly.
You know, there is – Ford doesn't have that developmental program Mike mentioned as deep as Toyota starting first off, but then you run into that. There's only limited spots at the top that they may lose them or give up on them early in the case of Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez. So where does that lead? I do think College Racing needs to take a look at it and maybe try and secure that as far as them going to a second full-time ride next year. We've seen the Gregson make a couple of limited starts, both with College Racing and then Sharon mentioned Beard Motorsports in alliance with them at the Super Speedways. And Gregson's done an okay job. I'm not going to say great, but the thing I look at is the sponsorship ties, and this is what Beyond the Flag hit on. Bass Pro Shops has ties to Stuart Haas Racing from the past. And I personally think that's what's going to come into play when you talk about him or, and we're only looking at two possibilities, Riley Herbst and Noah Gregson. Riley Herbst having the monster sponsorship. Where does that come into play? The sponsorship is the deal. And unfortunately, I hate to say this because I think he has the talent. Ryan Preece is one that doesn't carry a sponsorship tie with him. And Mike was right. We kind of had him penciled in. It seemed logical. He was their backup driver. There's a seat open next year. He's getting starts this year and does the best in them. But he might be the one on the outside if he doesn't bring sponsorship with him, which I think Noah Gregson and Riley Herbst do. So we'll have to see, but it's an intriguing possibility.
It is indeed. Mike.
Jay brings up a really good point with the sponsorship end of it. Noah Gregson, we know, is deeply connected with Bass Pro Shops. I think he does a really good job representing them. He's usually really good about giving them shout-outs and interviews and just generally represents their brand very well. And generally, Noah Gregson's been really good about representing all of his sponsors, not just Bass Pro in the interview. So I think he would be an attractive option, not just for his current sponsor lineup, but I think marketing him as a driver to bring in more partners, I think, would be beneficial as well. Riley Herbst with the Monster sponsorship, I don't know if that'd be a benefit or a detriment to him going into the Cup Series, because remember, Monster already has a car that they sponsor in the Cup Series with Kurt Busch in the 45 or 2311. I know that Monster still sponsors two cars on different teams in the Xfinity Series, so that's not out of the realm of possibility. But the financial commitment of the Cup Series is a much different game. So I'm not sure what Monster would want to do. Then again, my understanding, and this is not anything official, this is just kind of the way I've been led to understand the way the Monster sponsorship deal goes, is the Herbst family owns, they get their money through a convenience and gas station chain that they own out west. And the Monster sponsorship isn't so much that Monster Energy is cutting a check to Stuart Haas Racing or Riley Herbst to run the race car. It's that Monster is basically not charging the Herbst-owned stores for the Monster product that they sell in the store as kind of a mutually beneficial sponsorship arrangement. So, yes, it's still a sponsorship deal. However, it's not your traditional, they're writing a check to the race team kind of a deal. It's the Herbst family is, they have a beneficial business arrangement that leads to the sponsorship deal. So how attractive that is to a different team like Stuart Haas at the Cup level, I don't know, but I do know it's a little bit different from a traditional sponsorship model. So it's probably something that they're going to consider. As far as what that means for Noah Gregson, I don't know. Sharon, you're absolutely right. He definitely looks like a prospect for College Racing. College Racing, again, a up-and-coming Chevy team. So if Chevy wants to keep their hands on Noah Gregson, College Racing, a second full-time car with College Racing next year may be where Noah Gregson ends up at. And I think that's probably right now, it's probably a more likely prospect. But it's an interesting consideration of him leaving Chevrolet to go to Stuart Haas or a different manufacturer, knowing that the traditional path of Hendrick Motorsports is probably not going to be open to him leaving Junior Motorsports.
Yeah, and that's just it. This is all speculation. We really don't know. It's very possible, with Ryan Preece being announced as the backup driver for Stuart Haas Racing, they may have already kind of shook hands on a deal for him to take that number 10 car next season. I don't think Riley Herbst is ready to jump into the number 10 car by any means. So I really think it's going to be Ryan Preece in that number 10 car next year, and Noah Gregson continuing up the pipeline with the College Racing and their affiliates. So that's why I think this is almost a mute conversation, but nothing is a given. We can speculate all kinds of different scenarios here, but nothing really is a given. like I say, Noah could be given the opportunity to take that number 10 next year, and he might jump at that opportunity. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Jay?
The only other thing I want to say there is that when we're talking about sponsorship ties, and it's one of those, I wonder if that's in the thought process, if a sponsorship stays tied to a manufacturer. Talking about Monster, they sponsor with Kurt Busch. He came from Chevy to Toyota, and then Ty Gibbs with it is in Toyota, but they also have it on a Ford. If Bass Pro Shops were to look at, they have it on Chevy already, as they are also affiliated with Austin Dillon at the Cup Series level, kind of spreading it out. If you have your brand on a Chevy, a Toyota, and a Ford, your chances of being represented in Victory Lane or running good, talked about, reigns over three manufacturers. So that's a tough one. If they stay tied to Chevrolet, like you said, of College Racing is kind of in line, and I think it would be a boost. We've seen them building that team this year with the two-car team, one full-time with Justin Haley, who had a good run this past weekend. So there's that one track. The other, that possibility of it being Stuart Haas, and like I said, I would think it does come down to between Ryan Preece, if, like you said, he's kind of been penciled in there. We feel it's been implied he's the backup driver this year, getting some starts. That was kind of the process. But if sponsorship money comes in, that tends to overrule what happens. So we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, I found it a rather interesting article, and to think about the possibility, especially then they tied it back to Harrison Burton going from Toyota to Ford last year into this year. So we know it can happen.
Yep, and you never know. There could be an agreement with Chevy on that Bass Pro Shop thing, too, where they don't go to another sponsor or to another manufacturer. They might be tied directly to Chevy. So, again, there's a
they
lot
sponsor
that
Martin Truex.
Oh, that's right.
They sponsor Martin Truex in the 19.
That's a good point, Mike. I'd forgotten about that.
That's where I say if they were to go to Ford, they'd have their sponsorship on one of every manufacturer, and their odds of being represented increase a third.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for the correction. I should know that too, MTJ. Okay, Mike. we are at the top of the hour, so I think we're going to have to call an end to this one. Let's go ahead and go around the table, and Mike, we'll start with you.
Sure, it's Mike_Zell on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. Got an article live, I think it went live late last week, kind of recounting my experience at Talladega Super Speedway this past, I guess 2 weeks ago now. If you haven't read the article, here's the cliff notes. Go to Talladega. If you don't believe me, you need to go to Talladega. Please, I'm begging you, on my hands and knees, with tears in my eyes, you need to go to Talladega. It is that good of a show. If you are a fan of NASCAR racing, or even if you're just a fan of watching some really interesting people, you got to go to Talladega. I can't recommend it strongly enough.
Okay. Jay.
Well, we've disagreed a little bit on the show, so we'll end it with agreeing. I would agree with Mike. You get the opportunity to go to Talladega, absolutely. You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram.
Well, I'll throw my name in the bucket. Go to Talladega, as I've always heard. It's a great track to go to. It should be on everybody's bucket list. It's certainly on my bucket list. And I would agree. Mike's article is still up at Fan for Racing. So in the search box, just put Fan at the Track, and it'll come up. Okay. I am Fan for Racing Psych on Twitter, Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we have our player for our radio broadcast, as well as our podcast. Big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say. And to our Fan for Racing crew, Mike Orzel, Jay Huseman, thank you for being here tonight. And Sal Segala, our co-host for the first 90 minutes here tonight. I want to mention that we did have Dylan Zampa on the show. He's racing at Irwindale Speedway on May the 21st. He's currently fourth in the Pro Late Model Series in the SRL Southwest Touring Series. And it was a really cool interview because he's racing with his brother in the same series. And his dad is the crew chief. And he talked about how he takes kind of a part-time role on as crew chief because his dad is trying to crew chief for both cars. So it's a cool interview. I would really suggest everybody go back and listen. And then we will be back here, Jay, on Thursday night for our preview show of the Kansas races that are coming up this weekend. Then you'll be back with me again on Monday night for the show on Monday night. So definitely looking forward to that. This Thursday, I'm still working on a guest for this Thursday and for Monday night. So, maybe between you and I, we can get that worked out before Thursday or Monday. Okay, with that, I guess we're ready to call it a night, guys.
All right, good night, everybody.
Talk to you Thursday.
Good night, everybody.